her from that final fateful path. But Tenshin was never meant to watch over Amaya, to be the keeper of her heart. He'd told her long ago to find another, to find a man who didn't shoulder his responsibilities, who wouldn't one day inherit his father's duties. Amaya had laughed at him and said she didn't want Kenshin to be her hero. She'd simply wanted to hold his hand. Let her be a comfort to him, as he was a comfort to her. Kenshin should have stopped her. Last night, and so many nights before.
"What are you going to do about this?"
His father stood alongside him, his face drained, dour.
"The harvest is not for several months. I can increase what I take from those who work our land, but this could possibly ruin us. Now that we've lost your sister's dowry, we may not have enough to last us until the next harvest."
"She's gone," Kenshin said aloud, the words like ash in his mouth as he took to his feet. They began to walk past the shadow of the charred granary.
"What happened to Muramasa-sama's daughter is unfortunate. If this harvest is plentiful, we can give her father a purse of gold. Of course, he will always have a place here. But that is not the issue of importance, Kenshin. You are my son, the Dragon of Kai."
Hattori Kano's gaze leveled as he eyed his son sidelong.
"What do you intend to do about the theft and destruction of your family's property?"
Fury blazed through Kenshin, hot and fast. His father thought to give Muramasa-sama a purse of gold? How would that even begin to offer recompense for what the revered metalsmith had lost? His father should be at the metalsmith's feet, begging for forgiveness, asking for atonement. Kenshin turned, intent on confronting his father once and for all, on changing his father's mind, influencing him to see the good, honorable, righteous path. Kenshin stopped in his tracks. This was precisely the way his father had always been. When confronted with an obstacle, Hattori Kano had simply offered money as a means to brush it from his path. Why would his father change his mind for the mere daughter of a famed artisan? Kenshin knew better than to try to persuade Hattori Kano that the righteous path was the correct one. Indeed, he knew better than to convince his father of anything that did not already fall in line with Hattori Kano's established way of thought. Especially since what Kenshin planned to undertake now had nothing to do with the charred remains of his family's storehouse, nothing to do with honor or respect. He would never forget the look of disgust on Amaya's face before she went inside the granary to finish what Kenshin should have started from the beginning, the last look they'd ever shared. Before he gutted each of the men in the Black Clan, he would burn them first. Then, at least for an instant, they would understand his pain.
Yumi floated across the tatami mat, a tray of food balanced in her hands. The way she walked reminded Mariko of a swan gliding across a pond, neck straight and silken feathers impeccable.
"I'm perfectly capable of feeding myself," Mariko said.
"I have no intention of feeding you," the Maiko replied, her features almost prim in their mockery. "I'm not your servant. I'm merely here to help, as your hands are not yet healed."
"I promise I'll continue taking care of them. May I please leave?"
"You may not. I promised Okami I would watch over you. If you're one to make promises, you're one to understand their value."
"I understand nothing."
Mariko attempted to cross her arms, but the bulky bindings around her hands prevented her.
"And I need the help of no one."
"I see." The beautiful girl's tone was not condescending, though Mariko knew she deserved to be patronized for being so petulant. Mariko sighed in defeat. "I thought I possessed all the answers, or at least most of them. Now I know I understand nothing."
"That knowledge is key to understanding the world, don't you think?" Yumi said as she knelt beside Mariko
and handed her a bowl of steaming rice. Mariko nudged the handle of her spoon with a bound fingertip. "Are you ever angry you were born a woman?" Yumi sat back on her heels and studied Mariko for a spell. "I've never been angry to have been born a woman. There have been times I've been angry at how the world treats us, but I see being a woman as a challenge I must fight. Like being born under a stormy sky. Some people are lucky enough to be born on a bright summer's day. Maybe we were born under clouds. No wind. No rain. Just a mountain of clouds we must climb each morning so that we may see the sun." As she let Yumi's words sink beneath her skin, Mariko's eyes drifted across the Maiko's perfect face, across her beautifully slow-shaped eyes, her pointed chin and broad lips. Then Mariko's gaze wandered around Yumi's chamber, to the elegantly displayed kimono, to the ivory pot filled with a powder made of crushed pearls, to the pigments prepared from safflower rouge for the lips and cheeks, for the polonia wood used for the eyebrows, cosmetics and silks to both mask and enhance a woman's features. Mariko supposed it was possible all women and men were forced to wear their own kind of masks. "But how can you say you're not angry?" she asked quietly. "Your brother left you here because there was no other place you would be safe alone. No other place for a young woman to live alone, save a geiko tea house in Hanami. My brother brought me here because he was too much of a coward to care for me himself," Yumi said curtly. "It had nothing to do with me being a girl." Though she was surprised to hear Yumi call Okami a coward, Mariko could not help but agree on this score. "We are given less," she continued, arguing her point. "We are treated as less, and whenever we make a mistake, it is weighed so much greater. The only great mistakes are the mistakes that remain ignored." Mariko sniffed. "I'm tired of being treated this way." "Have you felt as though you were incapable of fighting back?" "For most of my life, I have not fought back." Yumi laughed, and the sound brought to mind a set of wind chimes. "Okami warned me you were quite a liar. I see what he meant."
"Why do you believe me to be lying?"
"Because, Hattori Mariko, you are not one to conform to any man's expectations. Is that not, in a way, a manner of fighting back?" She smiled. "Believe me when I tell you I would not want to sleep with my feet pointed in your direction. Believe me when I say you would be alone in thinking that." Mariko frowned. Yumi inclined her head, her expression thoughtful. "There is such strength in being a woman. But it is a strength you must choose for yourself. No one can choose it for you. We can bend the wind to our ear if we would only try." She leaned closer. "Are you not the one who invented a weapon of exploding fire? Did you not bend the will of countless men with nothing but the fruits of your mind?"
"I can bend nothing. I can't even make your brother listen to me. Your entire family is exasperating."
Again, Mariko tried to cross her arms. Again, she was thwarted. "Don't act as though being inscrutable makes you anything more than irritating." Yumi laughed again, softly and lyrically. A knock resounded at the sliding door to her chamber. The Maiko stood to answer it, returning with a sealed piece of parchment. While Yumi read it, the edges of her lips became downturned. Her eyes started to narrow. Without a word, the Maiko burned the letter.
"What is it?"
Mariko asked. Yumi hedged, bit her lip. Mariko set aside her bowl of uneaten rice.
"You know something, don't you?"
"I know many things I am never supposed to tell you." It was a leading kind of statement, the sort Mariko knew better than to ignore. She leaned forward.
"Tell me anyway, Asano Yumi.
And at least for one day, we can climb the mountain together." Yumi's smile was pointed. My loyalty is not to you, Hattori Mariko. Then to whom do you owe it? To my brother and his lord, Takeda Ranmaru.
So, why are you even mentioning any of this to me? Mariko pressed.
My brother will not return to the city for some time, but I need to get Okami a message.
What is it?
Hattori Kenshin is marching on the western edge of Jukai Forest, she paused, in an attempt to rescue his sister.
Why now, of all times? Mariko cried, throwing back the embroidered coverlet. The rumors of the Black Clan being responsible for my supposed death have existed for months.
I cannot tell you why he is marching on them now, but word must be sent to my brother.
How did you normally reach him?
Okami comes here often. Unfortunately, I was never told how to find their camp. My brother thought it was far too dangerous for me to know. It was something someone could hurt me in an effort to learn.
Yumi sidled closer, tucking her pale green kimono neatly beneath her knees.
Are you certain you could not find their camp if you searched for it?
I have no idea how to find it. Yumi's voice dropped in sudden urgency.
Do you think you could try? You owe them that, at least.
A part of Mariko agreed. She did owe the Black Clan something, as much as they owed her an explanation. If they weren't responsible for attacking her convoy and trying to kill her, then who was? Who had tried to impersonate them that ill-fated night in the forest?
I can try.
Do you, she swallowed, really think Okami revealed my identity to the Black Clan?
I have never heard the Honsho Wolf make idle threats.
Mariko inhaled slowly.
They might not look kindly on you when you return, Yumi warned. They've slit the throats of other men for less.
With a careful nod, Mariko made a decision. Will you help me with something?
As long as it harms no one, then yes. What is it?
Mariko wobbled to her feet and began unraveling the bandages on one hand. If I am marching to my death, then I will march to it as a girl, without fear. The Shadow Warrior. Mariko was not afraid anymore. As her time with the Black Clan had taught her, avoiding fear made her weak. Embracing it made her strong. True weakness is weakness of the spirit. Mariko had lived a life of wealth and privilege, a life spent blissfully unaware of the suffering around her, a life she herself had never fully appreciated. Her mother did not give without expecting something in return. Her father only ever took. And Kenshin? Kenshin gave to others from a sense of honor and responsibility, but his honor and responsibility had failed him that night. Mariko had watched him torture Ren, had seen the aftermath of his attempt to find her in Jukai Forest. The bloodied bodies of innocent young men and women, of an old man much beloved by many. Only a few days ago, Mariko had been the reason such chaos had unraveled before her very eyes. Her invention had wrought havoc on her people, undoubtedly hurt some of them, and she did not yet know what had happened to all the members of the Black Clan. Her friends? Yes. If they were no longer her enemies, perhaps Mariko could one day consider them her friends. Certainly Yoshi. He'd only ever been kind to her. Offered her guidance and delicious food. Laughter in moments when she desperately needed it. And Ranmaru had been a strange source of reassurance for Mariko. This boy with an almost mysterious air to him, who nevertheless came across as approachable and direct in all of his dealings. Even Ren, her erstwhile tormentor. Well, on second thought, Mariko supposed he could never be a friend. Not unless she could catch him unawares with a few strategic strikes of her own. And Okami? No, they could never really be friends. Mariko wasn't sure she wanted to be the wolf's friend anyway. Could she ever be friends with a boy
after dreaming of the way his calloused hands felt on her bare skin, of the way his scarred lips felt pressed against her own. She supposed not. Mariko had never had friends before, real friends. Ones who were not threatened by her family or by her strangeness. Her strange desire to learn about anything and everything. Not until Mariko had first gone to the forest dressed as a boy did she ever realize how small her world had been. What it meant to be truly challenged. What it meant to be truly happy in a world where no one questioned her place. The Black Clan might reject her. They might kill her. Okami had said he would tell them. He'd said he no longer felt any obligation to keep her secret, not when she'd betrayed them as she had, by helping her brother. Their enemy. Mariko stopped in the clearing where Akira-san had perished, where Kenshin had lost his way. The burned lean-to was still standing. She looked to the trees, studied the jagged silhouette of the mountain in the distance. A silhouette she'd often studied while at camp. Everyone had told Mariko she would never be able to leave their encampment, that she could not run. But could she make her way back if she tried? Northeast. If Mariko trekked in that direction, it would be possible to find some kind of path, some evidence of where the encampment was. Unlikely, but possible. These were odds Mariko could work with. She began walking northeast, keeping the mountain in her sights. If there was any chance of finding the Black Clan's encampment without stumbling into a trap, Mariko hoped a girl would be the first one to do it. The sun had descended behind the trees. A white gold glow limned the horizon. Nightfall was imminent. Soon, Mariko would be lost in Jukai Forest, lost amongst the yokai. Lost amongst the Jupoko. Lost amongst those she'd recently betrayed. She trod carefully, searching for signs of black flowers, sniffing the air for the scent of blood, seeking vines covered in thorns, watching for anything that seemed out of the ordinary. Fear kept her alert. She would always let it feed her, never let it consume her. Mariko stopped in her tracks when a pair of yellow eyes formed in the darkness. A pair of yellow eyes she recognized well. When the beast took shape around them, Mariko held her breath. It eyed her as it had before, its head tilting to one side. Then it leaned back on its haunches and howled. The sound was low, but it began to widen, to layer with the weight of many voices, large and small. It echoed through the trees, ricocheting into the night. She was not afraid. Then the beast turned, waited for her to follow it. That time before, with the filthy man who had trailed after Mariko the night her convoy was attacked, the beast had warned her. She would trust it tonight. A part of her understood she'd almost expected the beast to find her again, as it had that first time. It padded through the dirt and dead leaves. Mariko realized it moved without making any noise. When she tried to draw close, it whipped its head back at her. The beast was edged in dark smoke, perhaps even fashioned of it. She followed it up an incline, until they came across a pool of fresh water. Though it was full dark, the beast stepped with an otherworldly sure-footedness. Then it dissolved on a wisp of wind, its eyes fading into black. Mariko stood within a tight grove of trees. The chirruping of insects halted, and the gentle sound of rustling leaves ceased. She heard nothing. Then, from the darkness, a single torch began weaving her way. It flickered through the branches as it approached her. Mariko's heart raced, but she was not afraid. She was strong, free. Other torchlights took shape around her, they all drew toward her like water gathering near a dam. Shapes materialized behind each ring of fire, darker, thicker shadows, enveloped in the night. But corporeal. They were all masked, all dressed in black. Thick lines of black ink had been drawn across their eyes. Mariko knew they saw her, saw a girl, dressed in a simple pale pink kimono, its hem stained from her trudge through the forest. A figure moved to the head of the converging shadows. He stood before her. Mariko knew, based on his stature, based on his bearing, that it was Ranmaru. "To be a shadow warrior, the forest must accept you first," he began. "It must see you as its equal, as its ally." His eyes glowed yellow for an instant. He winked at her once. Mariko remained still, her heart immobilized in her chest. The beast. The beast formed of smoke and shadow. It was Ranmaru. Which meant the leader of the Black Clan had known all along that Mariko was a girl. She longed to ask him why he'd kept her secret, why he'd helped her in the forest after her convoy had been attacked, only to disappear as she was set upon by a drunken fool. There would be time later for her questions. Now was not that time. "The forest led you here tonight," Ranmaru continued with a meaningful smile. "Only those it deems worthy are granted this gift." Mariko lifted her chin, accepting the forest's embrace, accepting that she had truly found her place here, in a grove of enchanted trees, with a band of mercenaries dressed in the color of night. "Hattori Mariko, do you agree to fight and die for your fellow shadow warriors?"
"Yes."
"Do you agree to fight for justice, irrespective of honor?" Mariko cleared her throat with conviction. "Yes. Do you agree to see all those before you as your equal, regardless of birth or rank?"
"Yes."
"Do you agree to use all manner of subterfuge, even lying, cheating, stealing, to achieve our shared goals?"
"Yes."
"And will you die to protect this secret?" She did not hesitate.
"Yes."
"Today you become Kagemusha. Today you swear to serve and protect all those in need." Ranmaru walked back when he finished. No leaves rustled nearby. No sound emitted from his footsteps. No wind carried with it the scent of warm stone and wood smoke. But Mariko knew Okami moved toward her. Her body leaned forward of its own volition, drawn like drying leaves to a river's edge. Okami stepped before her. "Close your eyes," he said softly. In one hand, he held a small earthenware pot filled with a black liquid. She let her eyes fall shut, reveling in the darkness, embracing her fears. "Be as swift as the wind, as silent as the forest, as fierce as the fire, as unshakable as the mountain." His words swept over Mariko as Okami's fingers brushed slowly across her eyelids, covering them with the same black paint they all wore. His touch was a flare of heat across her skin. When he finished, the wind took flight once more, the trees rustled with a sudden swish of air, and the branches creaked in celebration, as though the forest itself were welcoming her. Mariko tossed in her tent, sleep eluding her. She did not understand why she could not rest. The Black Clan had welcomed her. Not a single one of them had turned his back on her, though they all knew who she was. Though they all knew what she had done. She'd deceived them, infiltrated them, cheated her way through their ranks, outsmarted and betrayed them several times over. And they'd welcomed her for it, as though she'd always been one of their own. No one in her life had ever welcomed Mariko for being herself. Not her parents, never those in the nobility. Even Kenshin had wished her to be different.
wished her to conform, at least in the smallest of ways. She had done none of those things. Now there was nothing to fear. And still, Mariko could not sleep. Only when she paused to stare at the sloped ceiling of her tent did she understand why dreams continued to elude her. Okami had not spoken to her, save to tell her to close her eyes, save to recite the refrain he'd once said to her in passing. For the rest of the night, the wolf had leaned against a twisted tree trunk as Yoshi had come to take her in a rather energetic embrace, as Ranmaru had clapped her on the back, his grin simultaneously knowing and secretive. As each member of the Black Clan had, in his own way, demonstrated his solidarity, their sense of kinship with her. Perhaps Okami did not want Mariko to be here. Perhaps he had objected and been overruled by a higher authority. Overruled by the forest itself. The trees must have known better than they that Hattori Mariko belonged, above all, beneath the forest's sighing branches. Perhaps because she was far more inventive than all the men put together. Or perhaps the forest simply knew this was where someone like Mariko, a lost girl in search of a place to call home, could plant roots and flourish. She tossed again, kicking up her thin woolen blanket, wishing she'd had a chance to tell Okami that Ranmaru had always known she was a girl. Wondering if this revelation was worth seeding enmity between the two friends. When the flap of her tent rose, washing cool night air across her skin, Mariko yanked a throwing star from beneath her pallet and sat up in the same motion. Okami crouched outside the entrance. Throw it or put it down. He did not sound angry, but Mariko did not discard the throwing star immediately. He waited. Are you going to invite me in? Those are the words of a villain. I am a villain. A deceiver. The son of a traitor. And so much more.
I know.
So then, are you going to invite me in?
If I don't,
then I will never ask for an invitation again. Mariko moved aside, tossing off her thin blanket. She wore nothing but her white underrobe, but it did not matter. From him, she had nothing to hide.
Stay, or go.
I leave it to you. But you are welcome always. In all ways. Okami dipped inside the tent, letting the flap fall behind him. Mariko did not ask why he'd come to her tent in the dead of night. She dared not hope to ask, the blood pounding through her veins. He cast her a searching glance. I was unfair to you earlier.
I lied to you, she said simply. And I hated you.
I wanted to hate you,
he said.
It would have been easier to hate you. But I couldn't.
Okami lay beside her, long and lean.
One day I will tell you everything. About who I was. About where I came from.
Mariko stretched out next to him, her fingers laced across her stomach. I don't care who you were. I only care who you are now, and that you are with me tonight.
He turned toward her. Always. In all ways.
Okami stroked a thumb along her jaw. Mariko leaned into his touch as he framed her face between his hands. As he kissed her, eyes closed. Look at me. It sounded innocent. But nothing Okami ever said was innocent. When Mariko opened her eyes to meet his, she saw a night full of stars.
To me, you are magic.
His voice was soft. It slid over her skin like silk. The words he spoke were firm and unyielding, steadfast. It gave Mariko comfort, for she too was equally unyielding, equally steadfast. She kissed his wrist, then reached for the loose collar of his kosode. Her hands brushed away the fabric, bearing him to the darkness. When his fingers grazed the muslin of her thin underrobe, It sent a shiver down her back. The slide of the ties through his fingers was like a spark igniting in the dark. "I want to lie here next to you tonight," Okami said.
"How unfortunate for you," she murmured, "because I want much more than that."
He smiled, his lips pressed beneath her chin, and Mariko wrapped both arms around his neck, drawing him over her. Okami took hold of her wrists, pinning them above her head with one hand. Then he dragged a fingertip along the edge of fabric at her chest, loosening it, pulling it away. All too slowly. She sighed in frustration. "So impatient. You've always been so impatient." With his teeth, he spread apart her underrobe. Every bit of unveiled skin he kissed, his breath a whisper and a promise. Mariko brought him back to her lips.
"You're trembling,"
she teased. "I'm cold." "Liar. Tell me something true. You first." She swallowed carefully. "I am not a maid." "Neither am I," he laughed as she shoved a hand in his face.
"Okami?"
She looked into his eyes.
"To me, you are magic, too."
Mariko rested a palm against his chest.
"My heart knows your heart. A heart doesn't care about good or bad, right or wrong. A heart is always true."
All trace of amusement vanished from his expression.
"I may lie every day of my life, Hattori Mariko, but my heart will always be true."
She could ask for nothing else. Mariko crushed her lips to his. He caught her against him, swallowing her sigh with a kiss, causing her to catch flame as his tongue swept into her mouth. She let the fire burn through her until every thought in her mind was nothing but a wisp of smoke. And Mariko felt it. The magic of a night sky filled with stars. Of a haunted forest with demons hidden in its folds. Of a liar cloaked in truth. She felt it with every brush of his lips, every touch of his skin to hers. The searing warmth of this new emotion. This hope she dared not name. A part of Mariko knew better than to touch this kind of flame, knew better than to let anything deliberately burn her. But she returned Okami's embrace, returned each of his kisses, every touch, until nothing at all existed between them. But shared breaths and unspoken promises. Lies and unshakable truth. The Black Orchid. Kanako watched her son Raiden sit across from the son of her enemy. She watched him laugh, watched him listen intently, interject occasionally. Her face was cool and calm, though her blood boiled from within. The Emperor dreamed of a world in which both his sons held power. Roku as Emperor, Raiden as Shogun. For years, Kanako had smiled at this, smiled and gifted the Emperor tastes of her power, tastes that had intoxicated him, kept him in her thrall. It had not mattered to her that the Emperor's evil hag of a wife mistreated her daily, spoke down to her, belittled her at every turn. It was not unusual for an emperor to have several consorts, for an empress to abase them out of jealousy or spite. But Kanako had watched for 19 years as the hag had mistreated her son. Openly mocked him, openly called him a whore son. Kanako could stomach anything when it came to herself, but she would not stomach any more of the tiny she-devil's contempt for Raiden. The emperor was her lover. Her son was her beloved. There was no contest when it came to Kanako's loyalties. She wandered away from the first enchanted Maru, wove through the next set of gates, then another, and another. Kanako paused before a flowering orchid tree,
When she raised her hand, the surface of its leaves shimmered, distorted. The tree had been bewitched years before by an enchantress of great skill. Kanako waved her hand across the blossoms, removed a purple flower at its base. She gently drifted past the vines along its bottom, vines that snaked toward her feet, then curled back as though they'd wandered too near a fire. A mirrored surface shimmered to life before her. Kanako touched a finger in its center and watched 8 concentric circles ripple from the point of contact. She stepped through the mirrored surface into a garden absent of color. Everything around her was rendered in shades of gray and white, of black and silver. Her skin was milky, her kimono a stark contrast, a layered arrangement of painted silk. A man waited beneath a yuzu tree. Its citrus scent wafted toward her, sharp and fresh all at once. The man stood, dressed in a formal hakama, his features solemn. A dark gray fox with golden eyes ambled across a corner of the enclosed garden, stopped, and waited. "I've come with another task for you," Kanako said to the solemn man.
"Then I am to reemerge from this place?"
"It is time." She conjured a silk purse from nothingness. The silver pieces within clinked together as she passed it along to him. "You must tell my son to go into Jukai Forest. The fox will show you the way."
"How does the fox know?"
"The fox is a creature of the forest. It always watches, always knows." Kanako smiled warmly. "Tell Raiden to seek out the Dragon of Kai." The man's gaze hardened.
"Hattori Kenshin."
"You were unsuccessful in the forest the first time, but here is another chance to remedy your mistake. Find the dragon's sister, and you will find the one we seek. The one who will set this course on its rightful path."
"What am I to do with the dragon once I am done?"
"It is immaterial to me what happens to Hattori Kenshin. Bring me a way to control the leader of the Black Clan, a way to exert influence over the son of Takeda Shingen. If he will not come to me of his own volition, then I will pull his strings from afar and wait."
"This is what the Emperor wishes of me?"
Kanako bowed. "I serve our Emperor in all ways. And you serve him in the greatest of ways." The man nodded and returned her bow. Kanako passed him the flower in her hand. The orchid had turned black. She breathed deep of its perfume, blood, and heavy musk. "Take care not to damage our prize, Nobutada-sama."
"Of course."
For an instant, his eyes glazed over. Distress washed across his face. The distress of a man in conflict with his soul. "The Emperor will not look kindly on you should you fail," Kanako reminded him, imbuing her words with steel. Nobutada nodded, setting his spine straight.
"If need be, I will die to bring an end to this conflict."
"Of that I have no doubt," she smiled. "You are the finest of samurai, a true tribute to your way." Her eyes drifted across the sea of gray and silver before her, to the immense white oak tree in the distance, and the distortion in its center. "If Hattori Kenshin should cause you any trouble, do not hesitate to inform me." Kanako wandered closer to the white oak. "I am caring for something he desperately wishes restored to him. Your lord will be grateful to us for our consideration." Nobutada bowed once more. Kanako waved her hands across the thick trunk of the white oak. The mottled surface of the bark shifted to reveal
A young woman, fast asleep in an enchanted slumber. Half of her face was badly burned. A Mountain of Fire. The next day, all the men of the Black Clan were put to work, fortifying the camp's position against the Dragon of Kai's oncoming onslaught. All the men. Mariko protested loudly when she was sent once more to work alongside Yoshi. Blank faces and solemn stares were the only replies with which she was met. Finally, after 3 days spent preparing food, Mariko stood her ground before evening mealtime, tightening the dark silk cord wrapped around her middle. As before, she'd donned the clothing of a warrior, but she now chose to augment her garments with elements more suited to her status as the camp's only female. "I would hate to think," she began in a stern voice, "that my place is manning the cast-iron pot simply because I'm a woman."
"Why would you think that?"
Lines puckered across Yoshi's brow.
"You did not protest before."
"Give me something meaningful to do."
"Do you not find providing sustenance meaningful?"
he huffed. "I did not mean to insult you."
"Nevertheless, you did."
Though Mariko had never been gifted in the art of placating, she attempted to do so now. She took a step back and channeled her best attempt to emulate Yumi. "You're being entirely too sensitive, Yoshi-san. I am merely stating that I'd be of far more use developing a way to reinforce the existing defense structures than I would be stirring a simple pot of bean curd." Yoshi turned to yell into the darkening woods.
"Okami!"
"What are you doing?" Mariko said under her breath in exasperation. Ren limped from the bushes, the wound in his side still causing him obvious pain.
"What did you do now, woman?"
he seethed, his face wan, the color in contrast to his eyes. "Nothing you need concern yourself with, boy," Mariko retorted. Okami shoved through the underbrush, his arms coated in a thin layer of sweat. He waited, and Mariko ignored the way the setting sun struck the angles of his face, brought his muscles into sharp relief.
"Why did you shout for me, Yoshi-san?"
Yoshi pointed at Mariko.
"She was condescending."
"What did you want me to do about it?" Okami raised his eyebrows. Yoshi shrugged.
"I thought you might talk to her. After all, she might listen to you,"
he grumbled. Okami started to laugh, then promptly turned and walked away. Mariko smothered a smile and refrained from watching the wolf's tall figure vanish from sight. It would do no one in the camp any good to know how often she looked for him, even at the most inopportune moments. With a heavy sigh, she turned back to the steaming iron pot. Arrows screamed into the dirt nearby, their feathers notched to create sound.
"Warning arrows."
Yoshi dropped the bowl of ground ginger, and it broke into pieces as soon as it struck the forest floor. Mariko scrambled up the hill as several members of the Black Clan rushed to look at the color of the arrow's feathered fletchings. Ranmaru stopped short beside Mariko, his sword already in hand. Red. Which meant that armed intruders had been sighted in close proximity to camp. "How did they find us so quickly?" Mariko's whisper was hoarse.
"A dark magic haunts these trees," Ranmaru said.
"Like calls to like. If the soldiers have a way to commune with the yokai, then it's possible one of the spirits has led them past our traps." The ground beneath them grumbled. Ranmaru looked behind them. "The mountain is talking again."
"What is it telling us?"
Mariko felt the warmth of Okami's presence at her back. The wolf pointed over her shoulder to the tree line. "That we are out of time." When Mariko saw the crests flying above the row of mounted samurai in the distance, she nearly collapsed. The crest of the Minamoto clan, alongside the crest of her own family. At the head of the troop sat her brother, the Dragon of Kai. He'd begun in the clearing, the fateful clearing where his sight had left him, and all that remained was feeling. The feeling of being threatened, of being lied to,
of being hunted. Kenshin had lashed out that day, cut down any and all who strode near. When he'd awoken, he'd found his sword covered in blood. The bodies of the old man and the boy and girl who'd worked alongside him had seared into his vision. In his dreams, it was the fox that had saved him. It was the fox that saved him now. When Kenshin had begun searching through Jukai Forest for any signs of the Black Clan, the creature had led him to another watering hole, where an enormous man, nearly 3 heads taller than anyone else present, with a broken wrist, sat drinking himself into a stupor. This disgruntled giant had told him to ride toward the mountain, to gather Takeriran Maru's topknot, and bring it back to him so he could collect a bounty from a nearby daimyo, a bounty that would allow him to regain the respect of his men. Kenshin had been pleased when Raiden had first offered to accompany him, to help rescue his sister. The feral creature Kenshin had seen that night through the flames around the granary was not Mariko. She'd been crazed, savage, so unlike the gentle scholar Kenshin had always known. It must have been these men, these bloodthirsty mercenaries of the Black Clan who had turned her into such an unimaginable version of herself, who had made her descend to her baser instincts in order to survive. Kenshin would destroy each of these men, tear them limb from limb for what they had done to his sister, for what they had done to Amaya. But all was not lost. Mariko had warned him. Indeed, that message could have come from none other than his sister. She told the blind man to seek Kenshin out, to save the granary. Just as he intended to save Mariko today. He would root out this evil from Jukai Forest once and for all, with the Emperor's son and his sister's betrothed at his side, with the might of the Empire at his side. Hattori Kenshin would right the wrongs of this forest, and learn exactly what its trees had to hide. The mountain grumbled once more, this time even louder, as though it were warning everyone present that the sun was on the cusp of disappearing, that all light was about to be lost. Mariko grabbed her katana and searched for Okami. The wolf had moved to direct other members of the Black Clan into the trees, as they'd decided early on. What they lacked in numbers, they planned to make up for in higher ground. Mariko was supposed to have climbed into her post immediately, but she'd stopped to help Ren. Her erstwhile tormentor still had not gathered enough provisions or adequate weapons for the pending siege. And now they were out of time. Not all of them would make it to their assigned posts. Not all of them would be able to fend off the attack. When the arrows started to rain down through the trees, Mariko knew they'd also lost the option to flee. Her eyes flitted across the rapidly darkening underbrush, searching for something, unable to find. "Follow me." Okami moved alongside her, sure-footed, even through the rising gloom. He hoisted Mariko into a tree before climbing into position at her side.
"Anatte!"
The call for another volley of arrows echoed from the woods beyond. Okami grabbed the wooden shield and yanked Mariko against his chest. The solid beat of his heart thudded in her ear as arrows pounded into the shield and struck the branches around them. The thunder of hooves followed soon after the last arrow volley. When the mounted samurai came into range, the Black Clan began firing back. Mariko reached into her pouch of throwing stars and took a deep breath. Okami ripped an arrow from the tree trunk before firing it into the first wave of charging cavalry.
"Fight back, Hattori Mariko. I know he's your brother, but his men are not making the distinction, and neither should you."
"I know," she gritted her teeth.
"The only power any man has over you is the power you give him."
Okami fired another shot, and a soldier tumbled from his horse below. At that, Mariko rolled her shoulders, took aim with her throwing star, and hurled it into the darkness. She'd managed to injure 3 samurai and take down another warrior from his steed before she noticed something. Mariko could not see her brother anywhere. If she knew Hattori Kenshin at all, she knew her brother would be at the vanguard of any fight. something was wrong. Mariko looked past the trees and saw torches in the distance, but they were not normal torches. They were immense. Rounds of fire bigger than Yoshi's iron cauldron.
"We have to get down," she gasped. "Tell all the men to climb down from the trees at once."
The wolf loosed another arrow. "What?"
"Do it now, Okami."
Across the way, they heard a shout. Mariko saw Yoshi tumble from a tree to the ground, breaking several branches along the way. Okami whistled loudly before vaulting to the forest floor to help him. At that moment, the first ball of fire was catapulted in their direction, and the sound of men screaming in terror began. The Phoenix.
"It is over," Kenshin shouted to the trees.
Smoke curled in the night air before Mariko's brother. Blood scented the leaves at her sides. Fire smoldered against the forest floor. She strained once more to see any signs of Okami and Yoshi, but could not make out anything beyond the wall of smoke to her left.
"Reveal yourselves," Kenshin said grimly. "Return my sister, and the rest of your men might live through this night."
"And if I refuse?" Ranmaru replied. His back was to a tree trunk beyond her brother's view. The leader of the Black Clan smiled at Mariko as he spoke, but it did not touch his eyes.
"I will set fire to every tree in this forest."
Ranmaru's laughter was bitter.
"Then you, and your sister, will burn with us. This forest is not yours to control anymore," Mariko's betrothed said, his voice clear and firm.
"I was wondering why you chose to show yourself today, Raiden-chan."
"Who is that?"
Raiden said, urging his horse forward. Ranmaru stood, his back still to the tree.
"We played together as children. Would you know me if you saw me now?"
"Show yourself."
Mariko watched Raiden dismount from his black warhorse.
"You have taken my bride prisoner. I propose a trade. Return Hattori Mariko to me, and I will return something of great value to you."
"And if I refuse, will you then burn your bride as well?"
A breath of tense silence passed.
"Reveal yourself."
Raiden turned to the samurai behind him, taking hold of a sheathed sword from the warrior's hand.
"And I will give you that which your father lost so many years ago."
To Raiden's right, a gray fox shifted into view, staring at Mariko through the smoldering trees, before darting back into the shadows.
"I have no interest in anything you might have to offer."
Ranmaru did not even look to see what it was. Instead, he reached for Mariko's hand and squeezed it once. The torch at Raiden's side rendered his smile sinister, a smile that would, on any other occasion, be pleasing to most young women's eyes. But never to Mariko's. Not after this night.
"I think you do not know what it is I possess."
Ranmaru sighed quietly.
"I think you do not know what it is you seek."
Nevertheless, the leader of the Black Clan let go of Mariko's hand and moved into view. Okami wiped the blood from Yoshi's mouth as he listened to his dearest friend barter with the son of his greatest enemy. Yoshi coughed again, and more blood trickled from his lips.
"You can't die yet, old man," Okami said with a sad smile. "And you can't tell me what to do, you ungrateful boy. You gave up that right long ago."
He returned the smile, then winced. Okami glanced at the wound in his side, at the blood leaking from the arrow puncturing Yoshi's stomach, slowly killing him.
"Are you going to let him do this?"
Yoshi whispered. Okami wiped the blood from his mouth once more.
"Don't let him do this,"
Yoshi continued in an urgent whisper.
"The young lord has done everything he can to make up for what happened those many years ago, for what his father did. Please forgive him."
"There is nothing to forgive, Yoshi-san."
"Then don't let the young lord die to keep your secret."
I would die before letting anything happen to him. Okami inhaled slowly. And it didn't begin as my secret.
It was always your secret. The young lord made it to protect you.
Yoshi cringed in pain.
Now it is your turn to protect him. Do this for me. Do this for your father.
He reached for Okami's hand.
Be as swift as the wind, as silent as the forest.
Okami wrapped both hands around Yoshi's bloodied fist. As fierce as the fire, as unshakable as the mountain.
Rise from the ashes,
Yoshi said,
and take your rightful place.
The leader of the Black Clan moved forward warily, the sound of bowstrings being tensed murmured through the branches. Marika watched Ranmaru shift toward her betrothed. For an instant, she was unnerved by how much bigger Minamoto Raiden appeared. Ranmaru was not small, but Raiden was far broader in the shoulders. His armor and the twisted horns curling from his helmet made him seem more powerful than Ranmaru in all the ways that mattered, especially on the field of battle. Like the remainder of her shadow warrior brethren, Mariko crouched forward, brushing her thumb across the surface of her last throwing star, ready to strike. She tried to ignore the hurt that filled her eyes when she glanced her brother's way. Mariko could never take aim at Kenshin. Her brother had asked after her, but he'd not attempted to make a trade before raining arrows down upon the Black Clan, before catapulting spheres of fire into the trees, any of which could have killed her, any of which nearly did. Her brother had been more concerned with causing harm than he'd been with finding a solution, just like her father. Ranmaru paused before Raiden. He stood tall, fearless. With a wicked gleam in his eye, Raiden unsheathed the sword in his hands. Marika flinched from the sight. The metal of the sword was not fashioned of normal steel. It gleamed white like a flash of lightning, like something enchanted with an otherworldly light. A vague memory began to take shape in the deepest recesses of Mariko's mind. An old story whose words were just beyond her grasp. Ranmaru did not reach for the sword.
"Do you not recognize this weapon?" Raiden asked.
Ranmaru's back was to Mariko, but she saw his hands turn to fists.
"You have no right to that sword."
"I have every right."
"Your father murdered mine in cold blood. Return that sword to its rightful owner."
"Return my bride."
"A girl is not a sword, and no price is worth that trade." Raiden took a step forward.
"You truly believe that?" "This sword has been in your family for 1,000 years. Your ancestors would turn over in their graves to see you disregard its significance."
"My ancestors,"
Ranmaru took a breath, "would never agree that a weapon is worth a life." Raiden brandished the sword, swinging it from one side to another in a slow arc.
"It's a magnificent blade. I've never seen its equal. When I was told to return it, to offer the sword in exchange for my bride, I thought the same as you do now, that no weapon could be worth a life."
He brandished it once more. The final arc brought it within reach of Ranmaru's face. Raiden held it there for a breath. The sword remained an eerie, almost pearlescent white, as though diamonds had been ground upon its surface. Ranmaru remained staunchly unmoved, though Mariko watched his fists open and close twice.
"You do not recognize this sword, and it does not recognize you,"
Raiden said slowly.
"Who are you?"
When Ranmaru failed to answer, Mariko's heart missed a beat. The lost story took its place on her tongue, with a sudden seizing clarity.
"The Takeda sword. The Furin Kazen."
It had been taken from the Takeda clan when its family had fallen from grace.
an enchanted weapon, a sword of light.